You're listening to the public feed of Carefree Highway Revisited, which includes only a portion of this conversation. To hear the complete discussion, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or see the show notes for details. Hi, everybody. It's Mike. You're about to hear part one of a two-part interview that I did with Glenn Nelson about Gord's Gold, which was the compilation album that was released in 1975 and that included reworkings of about half the songs that appeared on the collection. That's album one of two. The justification given at the time was that Gordon didn't like listening to his early work. In any case, you're going to hear what Glenn and I have to say about some of those songs in this episode, and in a later episode, you'll hear us talking about the second half of that collection. So I hope you enjoy.
The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
Welcome to Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates Gordon Lightfoot's music song by song, a proud member of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and with me today is a fellow Lightfoot fan from Keller, Texas, Glenn Nelson. Glenn, thank you for coming back on the show today.
You're welcome, Michael. Glad to be with you.
So what's new with you, Glenn? The last time you were on the show with us was in July of 2023. So is there any news in the world of Glenn Nelson since the last time we were together?
No, everything's gone real well for myself and family and my wife. We're enjoying retirement, continuing to collect records. Can you imagine that? Even after a long years of collecting, every now and then, you know, something will show up, even a Lightfoot album that a Pickwick like that I didn't have. So that's going on. And then really enjoying, actually, on Facebook, there's a lot of music clubs, and you and I both, I know, enjoy a lot of the Gordon Lightfoot clubs, and especially Gord's Gold for me has been an interesting experiment, and so I bring some of the songs that I like into that club, and so continuing to just be a huge Lightfoot fan, and I know you are as well.
Oh, absolutely. And Facebook is the life and breath of this podcast. And it's always great to talk with people about the music, particularly in a setting that's so conducive to interaction like what Facebook has. But as you said, Gord's Gold is the name of a group on Facebook, and it's also the name of the album that we're going to be talking about today. For me, it is the definitive Gordon Lightfoot set. It's better than any greatest hits or any collection or best of that's come out since then. It was the very first thing I ever heard from Lightfoot. It was the only thing I heard from Lightfoot for a very long time because I got busy growing up and because I didn't develop an interest in folk music where I could actually do something about it and decide what I wanted to listen to until much later. It has most of his best songs up until the time that that collection came out, and it's written at what I think is his artistic and commercial peak, which is 1974 and 1975. So what's the impact of this album for you?
Well, you said it really well. It's similar for me. I think the difference would be my launch point was 1970 when I was in college, just starting college. And If You Could Read My Mind, the retitled album came out. And even though I had been up on the folk scene, the Brothers Four, Peter, Paul, and Mary, even listened to Ian and Sylvia, I think that the 1970 album started an era for Lightfoot that he really continued in the 70s developing his signature sound. So when Gord's Gold came out, I bought the album thinking, wow, you know, I'm going to get the stuff from 70, 71, 72, 74 from Sundown. You know, I was just excited, like any greatest hits. You want to do that. The I was in for a surprise, though. The ambition for Lightfoot to literally go back and record all of these great folk songs that he had done for United Artists, and most of which I was not that familiar with yet. So Gordon's goal was the impact that spurred me back to say, wait a minute, I haven't given Gordon Lightfoot his full due. I need to go back. And so it was a very strong influence on me to say, wow, this is not just one of seven artists that I like. This guy might be in the top three, you know, right in there. So once they get to that level, I start collecting everything that I can find.
Well, you know what? You said it so well also, Glenn. I think you said it even better than I did. And we know that the reason that Gordon recorded those songs on Album OM is that simply, as he said in his liner notes, he doesn't like listening to his early work. And there's certainly a lot of maturing that he had gone through in the preceding 10 years. So I understand the discomfort, and I think a lot of musicians do also. But you almost so brought up a good point that in 74, 75, Sundown had just come out. He's not at Summertime Dream quite yet, but it does beg the question, was this as much of a calculated move to put out the double album as it seemed? You alluded to the idea that these were from UA, so somebody might have been thinking, well, this would necessitate people going back and buying the old albums, which means there's going to be residuals there. So I'm wondering if you could talk about what the historical context of the double album was and maybe what the strategy had been from him up until that time.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about that question, not just because we were getting ready to go into Gord's Gold here, which that question begs to be asked and answered. But I think that I take away from what I read from Jennings on him and just knowing kind of what Gord did over the years of being so involved with the engineering and the recording, he got more and more involved each year, each album that went by. And I think that he probably wanted a shot at applying his newly found and fully developed skills to say, wait a minute, I wrote some great songs and I'm not sure that they were given their full due when I recorded them. You know, I know he did hesitate to listen to the UA recordings, but my goodness, his voice was great. And for the period, it was classic folk. So, you know, we would all, to me, if I could have produced something like that, you know, obviously I wouldn't have been concerned about the fact that you've changed your style a little bit over the years. But I think that part of it was that getting control of his own songs and doing it in the way that he had matured and the things that he had learned about the instrumentation, the expansion of his band, and eventually getting people like Pee Wee Charles involved, you know, all of that is laid out in front of you. Why not go back and get great songs that you wrote?
Well, that makes perfect sense. And it did give him a chance to use the tools that were not available to him in 65, 66, and 67, either because the tools didn't exist in those years or because UA didn't have the budget to provide them to him at that time. And let's face it, recording in the mid-60s was very different. It was still kind of this corporate mentality and union rules with the engineer so that you could be doing the best vocal of your life. And someone in the control room says, oh, break time, and shuts down the microphone and the mixing board. And you're standing there sort of dumb and happy, having no idea that you've been shut down. So this is really a perfect time for him to do that, because by the early 70s, artists got their hands on the tools.
Well, and also that's exactly right. And I think that it's not just the tools and what's available to him, but he knows from the concerts that he did through the early 70s, he knows what the audience is responding to. So, You know, there's another chance to where, you know, if you went to those early concerts, then you're going to hear Canadian Railroad Trilogy and so forth. So that why not get it onto to a record during your peak popularity? So very smart move on his part.
We mentioned the audience response, Glenn, and this is a good place to mention this. What we are going to be doing today is going to be looking at things that were maybe commercially successful for him, but they were also things that he had re-recorded because album one was entirely redone. So he had a chance to reimagine them to some degree or another. And I don't have the statistics on each of the singles that we're going to be talking about on album one, although that information is readily available. But we are going to be focusing on the re-recorded songs. We're going to be comparing them to the original studio recordings, and we're not really going to talk about the live recordings very much because that's an entirely different kettle of fish. So with that, Glenn, shall we go ahead and jump in?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm Not Saying, which was the very first thing that most people heard when they listened to Gord's Gold. I've got to admit, though, I like the original recording of this song better than the redone version. So from the Lightfoot album that came out in 66, I thought it was more of a wholesome production. Before the extra music and the extra instruments, the extra arrangement was put in, and the strings in particular. Now, I understand why it was there, because it was part of a medley, and you had to find some way of connecting these two songs in a way that made sense. But if I had to choose between the two of them, I would choose the original over the re-recorded version for I'm Not Saying. So what was your thinking?
Very similar. I'd look at it a little differently, only in the sense of there's no question that I preferred the original. And what we had to do, and I tried to do in my mind as we prepared for this, is even though I'm Not Saying was part of a medley, I tried to listen to it separately. What if Lightfoot had recorded that in its entirety for this album?
Yeah, me too.
And so, because that's not the only way you can do it, because, you know, I'm not big into grading, well, should he have put those two songs together and how was the transition? You know, that's great for concert fare, but I think I'm too much of a purist to worry about that. I was looking at what would this have sounded like if he had done the whole thing. And I really think the original would be the preference, because I'm Not Saying is it's one of those folk songs. You know, Peter, Paul, and Mary picked up on Early Morning Rain. They could have just as easily picked up on I'm Not Saying.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. It's just that good. It's as good a song, every bit of it, as Early Morning Rain. And they are kind of two peas in a pod. I mean, the imagery and the vocal style. But it sounds like we both kind of land on the original version of I'm Not Saying. Well, that's all the time we have for here in the public feed. If you'd like to hear the rest of this conversation, along with all of our other extended and bonus episodes, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com. You can see the show notes for details.